Okay. I know that that might sound a little, a bit of a puzzling question, but for real, how does your brain respond to religion, or more specifically, religious activity? I want to share with you what Medical News Today is saying about that. And as we think about it, I mentioned religious activity. How does your brain respond to religious activity? So that's it. Let's think about this. I know a lot of you pray. Some of you pray every day. Okay, so here's one of my questions that goes along with the question I already asked. Is your brain responding in any kind of way? Is your brain engaging in any significant way while you're praying? Or do you suppose that maybe it's just your spirit that's engaged while you're praying? Is it just your spirit, or is your brain engaged too? How many of you really enjoy meditating because you've noticed that meditating brings benefits, whether you begin to receive answers to questions you may have had while you're meditating? Maybe you begin to relax a little bit more while you're meditating. Maybe it seems that you're drawing closer to our Creator while you're meditating. How about this? How many of you really enjoy singing spiritual or religious songs? And for those of you who do sing, whether it's in the choir or in the living room, how many of you would say your brains are engaged, actively engaged, while you're singing as a result of the singing? And that's the thing I need to throw into the equation, or inject into the equation. Not just that the brain may be responding, engaging at the time of prayer. How about engaging and reacting because of prayer, in response to the prayer, as a direct result of prayer, or as a direct result of meditation, or as a direct result of singing spiritual songs, religious songs? Well, whether or not a divine power truly exists, to some people, may be a matter of opinion. To me, there is truly a divine power, God Almighty. But I know for some people that is a debatable point. Okay, either way, though, whatever your view on that is, neurophysiological effects of religious belief are scientific facts that can be accurately measured. So there may be, I don't know, 50%, 62% of the people may say, yes, there's definitely a divine being with divine power. The others may say, nope, I don't believe that. But wherever you are with that discussion, the experts are saying there are, without question, neurophysiological effects of religious belief. Whether you're a staunch atheist, a reserved agnostic, or a devout believer, you are equally likely to find the effects of religion on human brains astonishing. Religious belief can increase our lifespan. Get this. Religious belief can help us better cope with disease. Lifespan and disease positively impacted by religious belief. Research in the field of neurotheology. All right, we've heard of neurology. We've heard of neuroscience. You heard me talk about neurophysiological. You've heard about theology. Now we're taking a look at neurotheology. That's the neuroscience of theological belief. Neurotheology is the neuroscience of theological belief. And it has made some surprising discoveries that are bound to change how we think about spirituality. For instance, sometimes scientists suggest that religious experience activates brain circuits in the same way that two other activities do. Two other activities that activate the same brain circuits as religious experience. Two other activities that people regularly engage in, regardless of what their position is on religion. Humans regularly engaging in these two activities. And they're saying that religious experience activates. When people are engaging in these two activities, there's certain areas of the brain that are activated. And when people engage in religious experience, the same brain circuits are activated. They're comparing religious experience and its impact on the brain to sex and drug use and their impact on the brain. And they're saying that religious experience activates the same brain circuits as sex and drugs. So here's the thing. Sexual intercourse, you know, I was sharing with you all some time ago. It's been a while since we talked about this, but sexual intercourse is not just about bringing our genitalia together. No, there's a whole lot more. If we're going to do it right, there's a whole lot more to sexual fulfillment, sexual intercourse, than just bringing the genitals together. Yes, the genitals should be brought together. The whole body should be brought together. The entire body, but not just the physical body, what we can see on the outside, the woman's breast, the man's chest, the woman's genitals, the man's genitals, the woman's thighs, the man's thighs. We see all of that. We know that should be brought together, but it goes beyond that. I mean, just from a physical standpoint, the brains should be brought together. Not that they're going to touch each other, but there's so much happening with the brain that can bring about union, bonding between the two. We talked about the release of hormones from the brain, for example. And of course, we don't have to be aware of this. We don't have to be thinking about this. In fact, we probably should not be thinking about this, the fact that the brain is releasing hormones, the brain circuits are being activated, and all of that. But know this. When we are coming together the way we should, and when I say the way we should, each partner is faithful to the other. When they come together, they're coming together. That woman is coming with, is joining with her husband as a woman who has sexual engagement with no one else. And I'm not talking about what happened before they were married. I'm talking about what is happening since the wedding ceremony, since they've been married. That man is connecting with his wife as a man who sexually engages with no one else. It's just the two of them. If they're apart, business trip, for whatever reason, they're apart for 6 weeks, ministry engagement, and one is overseas somewhere ministering while the other one is remaining at home, taking care of the children, doing whatever is being done at home. Neither of them engages sexually with anyone else. 6 weeks are up. Return home. The one who was gone returns home. And they engage. They come together again, with the only sexual experience being with each other. They're coming together as people who genuinely respect each other. And that's part of the reason that they both refuse to engage sexually with anyone else. Because they genuinely honor each other. They because they honor each other, they honor their marriage vows. And so when they come together, they can come together emotionally and should come together emotionally. In other words, they're both excited about sharing sexual love with each other. Yeah, there's more to just the genitalia making contact. They both come together, each of them wanting to experience total fulfillment themselves, but also wanting their partner to experience total fulfillment. They both engage in the stimulation of sexual intercourse. They both experience the relaxing aspect of sexual intercourse. And they both, each of them appreciates the other for blessing them with such a beautiful experience. And their minds are made up even more. Hearts are settled even more that they will never, ever have that experience with anyone else. No one but their spouse. And then when the neuroscientists connect the electrodes and things, or they do the scanner, the MRIs, or the functional MRIs, magnetic resonance imaging test, and watch the brains, and they see how the brain lights up. They've done this too, by the way. This is for real, for real. They've done the test watching people and engaging sexually, and they've seen segments of the brain activating as a result of the sexual intercourse. They've done the same thing watching people on drugs. They've done the same thing as they have observed people having religious experiences. Let's look at that some more when I come back. You are listening to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., your loyal host.